It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolfhard. I get to interview some of the hardiest and most driven athletes in the world, people who test themselves against Alaska and win. But I admit I didn't expect that when I set out to do a show on dealing with a disability in the outdoors. This week's show, we'll have a conversation with three guys who do stuff most of us wouldn't dream of trying and do it from a wheelchair. I think what you'll hear on today's show is the same energy and enthusiasm we usually hear from really enthusiastic outdoors people, and you wouldn't know they had disabilities unless I brought it up in the conversation. But for the rest of us hoping to learn about a different perspective on outdoor adventures, we will learn about the disability aspect, and I hope you, like me, will get a new sense of the possibilities that still exist for almost everyone. Andrew Kirka is with me, and Andrew is an amazing athlete in many, many different sports, and has been to Sochi for the Paralympics as a downhill skier. He's been in the X Games. He's raced across Alaska with a hand cycle, and I'm here to tell you he's a very fit-looking young man who's got a lot of ability and also has a disability. And it sounds to me, Andrew, like the disability to you is almost something you don't think about. I mean, it's like that's not what you're about. You're about competition.
That's true, and not just competition, but really, I don't want to say proving to myself, but knowing that I can do something, and then going out there and trying to get it done. I mean, that's really all it's about. It's a pretty simple concept. I mean, that's the reason. What I do is called adaptive sports. It's something that's in human nature. You know, we adapt and we overcome. That is what makes humans the
amazing people we are. Right?
Exactly. Yeah, I was going to say the alphas of the world.
Yeah.
You know, is our ability to adapt, and that's personally what I feel that my object here in this life is to do, and to be an example for others in the process. You know, sometimes it's not necessarily about going out there and about doing something, but it's about the perspective of doing it. I mean,
well, and you're a multi-sport athlete, so you're not. I mean, you have taken on hand cycling, and you've taken on monocross, which sounds like you're a monoski X Games like competition with other people side by side with you. Some people have seen this kind of sport with snowboarding in the Olympics, right? But you're actually on a monoski, and then also speed downhill in the Paralympics.
Yes.
And also you're active outdoors with, doing all the other stuff the Alaskans do. So you haven't accepted any limitations.
I suppose you could say I haven't accepted any limitations, or maybe I have fully accepted my limitations and figured out how to work around them.
Okay.
I feel like that's a good way to go, because just like anyone else, they toss the canoe on the top of the car, they decide to go canoeing. I just find a way to do it. And it's pretty simple. I feel like that's a perspective that a lot of people just aren't willing to put the extra effort mm-hmm. into everything in life. And sometimes in a situation like mine, you just have to.
Yeah.
That's just the way it works now.
So you came in on a couple of crutches, and if you don't mind, just to tell people what your disability is, or what the issue is you have to deal
with. So I broke my back when I was 13 in a four-wheeler accident. It was partial paralysis. Currently I am paralyzed below the knees. When I first started, I was paralyzed from about half my abs down. And it took a lot of effort to start to get everything back. I have full feeling, and I have full movement, but I don't have necessarily like full function quite yet. That's how I'm able to walk.
Uh-huh.
It takes good balance. I mean, just to be able to stand, it took a lot of hard work right there off in the beginning.
Yeah. So is that a therapy, like physical therapy in the gym to rebuild those abilities?
That's exactly what that is. Every day for uh-huh. like 4 hours. For two straight years.
My gosh, that's a huge amount of time.
Yeah. It really is. But I mean, again, like, I broke my back when I was 13 years old. Mm-hmm. So I had to find a way to make it work. I had to find a way to adapt. A lot of people who get injured, they have a harder time seeing that way because they're so used to, I'd say the easier path in life.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's certain perspectives from everyone. You just have to find a way to change your own perspective.
Yeah. So 4 hours a day in the gym, you're virtually a gym rat just through your therapy. Did that feed into your athletic prowess?
You know what? I was actually a wrestler before I broke my back.
Uh-huh.
So I was actually very active, and I was actually a very good wrestler. I had won quite a few state championships, and wow. I had gone an undefeated season before I broke my back. So I was already really athletic, but I feel like being on that higher pedestal, when you get injured, the farther you fall.
Yeah.
And so that's what happened. So it drove me, but it was also a piece of sadness in my life. But being able to get that competition back in my life, being able to compete, now it's kind of brought a new rejuvenation to my life. And like I said, it's brought a new perspective. So the way I'm seeing everything in the world, I'm willing to just go out there and try it. Yeah. You know, I don't have any fear anymore. I'm willing to do it.
Like, well, I was going to bring up the topic of fear, because having been injured, now you're off like doing high speed downhill. You're doing monocross, which sounds kind of insane.
It's a little intimidating when you first look at the course, I would say. Yeah. But launching 70 feet with other people racing beside you is not necessarily ideal.
Yeah. So you didn't get scared off by your injury.
No. I feel like it actually helped to push me, because it's interesting the way this world works. I mean, it really is. I mean, people, you can get injured driving down the road in the car. Mm-hmm. You can get injured like how I got injured in a four-wheeler fishing accident. I mean, you can be injured in so many different normal ways.
Sure, it could be anybody, any day.
Yeah. And so, I mean, why not live life to the fullest? That's the way I see it. And, you know, there's no point in living life with fear. Yeah. It just limits you. I mean, you know, since I broke my back, I've done a lot more things that I never thought I would ever think of doing, you know, when I had my legs, or before I became adaptive. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I still wrestle. Wow. I coach wrestling. I've coached football, you know, and it's in the perspective. It's in the logic. I don't coach the older kids because I didn't have that experience, but yet I can make younger kids very athletic, and I can make them see things in a different way.
Yeah.
You know, I've done bodybuilding. And, you know, I'm a skier.
Yeah.
And anything that's thrown at me, I say, heck yeah, you know, I'll give it a try. And
it's an attitude.
Exactly. You know, and it's a perspective. I mean, I don't want to live a limited life. Mm-hmm. And I've come to see that a little bit more with the fact that I am limited, because I can't just walk outside my house, look at a mountain anymore and be like, oh, I want to hike that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have to. There's certain situations
where a how that comes into it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so I'm limited now in what I can do in life. And so that has to change my perspective on what I can do.
Does it ever enhance it at all? I mean, everybody who comes in here talks about how they add to the challenge. How do they don't want to do it the easy way. Well, you're not doing it the easy way.
Yeah, no, exactly. Well, I would say that it definitely adds to the challenge, but I mean, in the perspective, it's about figuring it out. Sometimes you just have to be a little bit smarter than what you're working with. You know, putting a canoe on a car, you know, per se. I had to take my canoe off my car this morning to drive into Anchorage because I went fishing yesterday. So I had to take it off on my own. And how's a person going to do that without legs? You think about it, you know, you're going to fall over, you're going to get all over the place. But no, I just drag it off the back, put the tail down, then go to the front, pick the front up and set it down. Where a lot of other people would just pull it off, put it on their shoulders, drop it on the ground.
Right.
You know, there's a certain level of having to plan things now.
Yeah.
That come into it. But I mean, it's not a negative thing. Not nearly at all. It actually, I feel like it helps you in life. You know, you go into a job and people start to respect that. They start to see exactly what you're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
And, but I mean, having an injury again, I'm talking about limitations. There's one of the limitations right there, working. I mean, I mean, we can be truck drivers. We can still be, you know, we can still be pilots for airplanes. You can be a radio DJ. You can do what I do. But there's a lot of different limitations that happen.
And you're going on the air to do your show. You do a DJ at a country music station.
I do, yes. Yep. Yeah. In the Valley, Country Legends, 100.9. Yeah.
You could tell we don't usually have a guy with your voice in here. So.
Yeah.
So tell me about your Paralympics experience. I mean, that the Paralympics has become, feels like as big as the Olympics. Maybe it's not really totally, but I mean, Sochi, that must have been quite a journey, and then it didn't turn out exactly what you wanted it to.
No, it definitely didn't. Again, that's where
Start the story. Like, what does it take to get there, first of all?
Well, to get to Sochi, you have to be a good skier. I mean, that's super simple. I mean, you have to be top five in the United States in any given discipline to be accepted for that discipline, and you have to be World Cup qualified. So
that means you've been competing a lot, and you've proven yourself at the absolute elite level. Yeah.
Yes, I have. I have. Currently, I'm fourth in the world for downhill and 10th for Super G. I got third at World Championships here this last year in the Super G in Panorama, Canada. Right. But all year we travel, you compete, and you just prepare to be the best in the world. I mean, the competitive level that the Paralympics competes at compared to, we call them able-bodied athletes or just normal athletes is right on par.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we are top 10 guys in the GS at World Championships. We were all within the same second. Top five guys within the same 2/10 of a second. So, I mean, the competitive...
It's not second best. Yeah.
No, it's not second best. The competitive level is very there.
Yeah.
And, but we just don't get quite as much publicity,
mm-hmm.
I feel like. But people love to watch us.
More and more all the time, I think.
Yep, exactly. It's increasing. But that's because of, a lot of adaptive athletes who want to be recognized.
You got selected to go to Sochi, which must have been a thrill all by itself. So what happened?
So... Like I was saying, the fear factor, I don't want to say that it got to me, but it was my weakness in that situation because I wasn't fearful of the course at all. And there was one really, really large error in it, mm-hmm. A larger error than I think we had taken all year. And I was warned about it, but when I went down the course in the downhill training run, I didn't want to take it at half mast. I wanted to take the course nice and fast, and I wanted to feel it out. I wanted to feel like I was fully prepared when race day came, because you get a few training courses,
mm-hmm.
Before you actually get the downhill course, because it's pretty dangerous. Well, instead of kind of increasing on my way, I felt like I was really in the moment. I was really excited, and I didn't let fear hold me back, and I ended up launching off the jump about twice or three times as big as you're really supposed to, and I ended up landing on the tail of my ski, over launched the landing zone. And I broke my back again.
Oh my God.
But I mean, that's a habit. It's my third time I broke my back.
Wow.
And then this last year, I broke my femur.
Oh my God. So that's a horrible injury.
Yeah. Like I was talking to you, femur's horrible. Like, I'll tell you what, I'll break my back 10 more times. I don't want to break my femur again. But I'll tell you what, like I was saying earlier, I mean, there's just a certain perspective to it. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I get a full season in without getting injured, I definitely feel like I can definitely be the best in the world. And right now, my career, I'm up there, but it's starting off kind of slow. And with the competitive level that it's at, I'm in that last moment of trying to get to the top. And mm-hmm. I know I can. I just need a full season without injury to get there.
Yeah. And tone it down on the training runs.
Exactly. Yeah. Just a little bit. Yeah. I've figured it out.
It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth, and we're talking about adaptive sports today and getting out there and have a real elite athlete in the studio, Andrew Kirka, who, as you were just hearing, went to Sochi, had an injury, but I'll bet he'll be going back to the Paralympics next time. Also, he's been involved in X Games. Hand cycling here in Alaska, and is one of our neighbors. So it's really cool to get to talk about this. I want to talk about how you got to become a skier. In terms of, you ski Alaska, you see adaptive skiers, but it seems like that's got to be a harder, challenge than an able-bodied skier learning to ski, or is it?
I wouldn't say that it is much at all. The problem is just being willing to adapt to the situation. And a lot of people, the hardest part is getting there.
Mm-hmm.
Getting out of the house, realizing that you can do it and having the confidence to do it is another big piece of it. And I had a physical therapist. She saw me progress as my, after my injury and mm-hmm. I was fully paralyzed, and then she saw me slowly starting to get better, but she saw that I was still missing that competitive nature in my life. I was officiating wrestling mm-hmm. because I just wanted to stay in the competitive world, but I really wasn't really able to at that point. But she saw a chance for me to ski, and, she took me to Challenge Alaska down in Alyeska. They tossed me on a monoski. She paid for my first lesson. I went out there. I was fantastic. And they said, hey, we'd love you to compete for us.
So you were natural.
Exactly. And they wanted me to be on the race team. And, beforehand, I was like, I'm a wrestler. Skiing's for pansies. I don't know about that. After I did it, I was like, it's so much fun.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, so that was the situation, And then I just started going back very consistently. I started raising funds, doing what I could. And, I was able to finally raise enough money every week during the week and go down there every weekend for the first year. And then I started progressing, made the race team, and then after
if you've got the passion, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Well, it takes the drive. You can do anything you want in this world, especially in America. We have all the opportunities given to you. Sometimes it just takes a little bit more work to get there.
Yeah.
And I saw that opportunity. I saw something I wanted to do, and I went for it. And you know, it worked out well for me.
Yeah.
You know, it was just the effort.
Yeah. So in hand cycling, I mean, you're getting ready to race basically from Anchorage to Fairbanks.
Yep.
Which is huge. I mean, it seems so daunting, you know, to do that with your arms. I'm just curious what your training regime is like, and how much time you must put in just to be ready for an event like that and competing at it at a high level.
Well, lucky for me, I am genetically fit. Mm-hmm. My cardio never really gets tired. My lungs, I don't ever really breathe hard, and my lungs never really burn that much.
So you got talent.
Yeah, I've got natural talent, luckily, in that situation, which is where I decided to do cycling. But my arms do die out, and the strength does die, so I do have to train. And usually I train to keep the strength in my arms. I live in Hatcher Pass, and I train on the uphill course there. I train every day. I try to wake up about 5:30. Every now and then I click the snooze until 7 or so. But I get up and then I go bike for about an hour and a half. I try
up to do that huge hill.
Yep, to Independence Mine up to the top from the base at about Turner's Corner right there.
Oh my gosh, so, that's incredible.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a burn, but you know, that's I feel like that's how you win the competition. I try to do it as fast as I can. But a lot, I find myself taking breaks.
and it's not just arm strength, but it's all total upper body.
Yeah, it's upper body and it's core strength as well.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. When it comes to skiing, which is by far my favorite, what I do, it's all core strength.
Yeah.
I mean, because you want your body to work like an opposite-sided pendulum, so it doesn't move in the middle, but yet the top and the bottom go in the same direction. So you get your body over the ski and you pressure the ski. And so we do all of that. We just do it at our abdominals. Is where we find that pinch, where most people find it in their hips.
Yeah. Wow, that's so interesting. Yeah, but where the center of gravity is,
exactly,
you know, is moving sort of upward in the body in a way, or like, because you're lower.
Exactly.
And so you're using different muscles. Cool.
Exactly.
So I just got to ask, when you come down Hatcher Pass, are you going like 60 miles an hour?
Oh, yeah. It's so much fun. Oh, it's my favorite.
Still the thrill seeker.
I came down at one time and my brakes broke.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, it was awesome. It was so much fun.
That sounds terrifying.
It was great. No, it was fun. It was fun. The only scary part was at the very base, like at the base of the Hatcher's Pass, right there at that hill, before what we call Cardiac Corner. There's that big turn, and that was the only sketchy part.
Wow.
I ended up having to go straight into the parking lot and then doing a big loop before I went down the hill. So.
Wow.
But yeah, and then I got my brakes fixed. Backcountry bicycle, hooked it up.
I think that's something you should keep fixed. Yeah.
Yeah. So, exactly.
Or have an anchor you could throw off the back.
Yeah.
So, what would advice would you give to someone who has had a recent injury, or someone who has a kid who's had a recent injury, and you know, dreams of seeing, you know, maybe not being a world elite athlete like you, but being an active, living in an active Alaska lifestyle.
You know, it's very possible. It's easily possible, and the only thing that it takes is hope. I think a lot of people, they lose hope halfway, and you know, that's what I'm here for. They can always contact me. They can always have me come over. I can show them directly how to do it. But a lot of times, it just takes the perspective and the willingness to give it a try.
Mm-hmm.
That's really
it's like you said, that first time we went skiing, you weren't too you just had to get over the hump to get out there, and then you realized what it was going to be like.
Exactly. This is fun. I love this. I could do this every day type situation. How about I make a career out of it? And I did.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that's really what it comes down to. I mean, you can take them out on the boat, they can go fishing, you can take them kayaking, they can do anything. Step number one, go to Challenge Alaska here in Alaska, because,
that's where the resources are.
That's where the resources are. That's where you can find the area to, you know, the people who are willing to help, that'll get you out there, and they have everything that it takes for someone to try it out, and they're very willing to help. And
as a community member, support Challenge Alaska, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's...
And you can find their website on ours. You can go to alaskapublic.org, click on today's show, and you'll see the Challenge Alaska link, and go to them, and they can use their support, and they can support you if you need it. And I want to thank you very much, Andrew. This is really, it's been inspiring for me. Now I'm feeling a little bit inadequate. I got to go out and really get myself going, because you are doing some amazing stuff. Very inspiring story.
Oh, thank you. You know, just... Staying busy.
All right. Well, thanks for being with us. Andrew Kirka, adaptive athlete, has been to Sochi, has done the Alaska Challenge hand race, and has been in the X Games. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
I'm Charles Wolforth. Stick with us as Outdoor Explorer continues.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on KSKA Anchorage. The program repeats tonight at 8 on FM 91.1. Connect with Outdoor Explorer anytime. Download podcasts and see what's coming up on future programs by going to our website at alaskapublic.org.
With me now is Ira Edwards, who is, I guess you'd say, a regular Alaska dude, a fisherman, hunter, has been a park ranger, enforcement ranger, and at this point in his life is in a wheelchair and is not letting any of that stuff go away. He's still doing all those things. And I thought it'd be great to talk to him because not everyone is sort of an elite competitive athlete. Most of us are interested in doing stuff that involves, you know, fishing and being outdoors and just enjoying life as Alaskans. And that's what Ira's doing. And so by talking to him, we get to learn a little bit about how you do that. So you said you got a moose, since you've been, since your accident. True?
Yeah. I had a cow tag a couple of years ago and, I will be honest, I thought it would be a lot easier than it was.
Yeah.
It was one of the harder things I got to do. But that was now my 9th moose, so I've been a fairly successful hunter before that with deer, caribou, elk, black bears. I figured it'd be easy. It wasn't, but I at least had the know-how to make it happen. It just took a lot more effort than I thought it would. But yeah, 450 pounds of packaged meat in the freezer the 3 days later after we got done hanging it and butchering it, so...
Well, give us an idea of how you do it, because people would assume, well, that's something you can't do.
Yeah, well, 4.5 years ago, I did break my back, and my spine is bolted together for about 7 inches, 8 inches. I got 6 vertebrae bolted together. So shooting a rifle was the hardest part. I can't bend over and shoot the way I used to. I had to relearn how to shoot, hold my body differently and do that. So I spent a lot of time at the range. A friend of mine had some hunting permits, and I taught her how to shoot, and I taught myself how to shoot.
Taught yourself how to shoot again. Yeah.
I mean, and I was a competitive target shooter in law enforcement. We did a lot of target practice. So I was a very good shot prior to. So that was the first step. And then I was able to, after I made the shot at about 270, 280 yards, borrow a four-wheeler to go out there and get it. Getting across this mucky area in a wheelchair, not quite doable.
But yeah.
I was always a on-foot hunter beforehand, but I'm okay with motorized tools nowadays.
Yeah, well, I think you've got an excellent excuse. But how did you get into the field?
I was able to drive there with a truck, and then I shot it from a kind of a blind area and across a big grassy field.
If you're that good of a shot, then I guess you don't have to get so close.
Right. I mean, actually, all the other moose I've shot prior to that have been less than 50 yards away. I mean, I could have taken them with a bow.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was... I was comfortable. I'm comfortable out to 350 yards and good wind, and it was not a difficult shot. Sitting broadside, moose are not a small animal.
They're pretty large, yeah. Well, I mean, just looking at you, you've got a lot of muscle on your upper body, and moving large objects without the use of your legs is hard. I mean, because we're used to lifting really with our legs.
Come-alongs are really nice. The ratchet winches that helped move it up onto a snow machine trailer. And help of a couple friends. So, but yeah, we used mechanical aids if possible. And then I used pulleys to hang it in my garage and let it age for a couple days and go through rigor mortis. And yeah.
You found out you could do it.
Yeah, it made it work pretty easy. I mean, it was harder than I thought, but it was not undoable.
And you do quite a bit of fishing and boating as well.
Yeah, I mean, I ride my hand cycle around. I fish. I shot ducks. I got a Kenai River boat, so I take that out in the ocean on good weather days. Good means calm. Good does not mean not rainy.
Right.
But yeah, we've seen a lot of whales, caught some monster shrimp this year, trolled for salmon, caught a couple cod and some halibut. Lots of trash fish. I can tell you hundreds of places that go catch fish you don't want to eat.
Yeah, really.
But
well, I guess, yeah. That's another hard part. There's no shortcut to that, right? Finding the fish.
But salmon and shrimp, I'm pretty solid with.
So, tell me about launching a boat off a trailer when you can't walk. I mean, because that's a strenuous activity.
Yeah. So I've worked around boats most of my life. I used to be a research biologist for Fish and Game, and spent 15 years on boats working. So I know how to drive trailers. So trailering is probably the hardest part for most people. Backing down ramps, not kinking the trailer. And then I have it set up where I have it rigged, and it can a rope. Just have a friend on the shore grab the rope, and I launch the boat that way. Same with loading it.
You back it in all the way till it floats.
Yeah, and I back it up and pull it up onto there. I do take out a lot of friends that aren't exactly experienced boat people. So, but yeah, the trailering is the hardest part, and I'm pretty good at that. That hasn't changed since I broke my back. So.
Yeah, what about getting in and out of the boat and that sort of thing?
That's more challenging. So I roll myself down the dock on my wheelchair, and then I lower myself to the level of the dock, and then toss my feet in the edge of the boat, which is sitting next to the dock, and then scoot myself into the boat onto some pads and then onto my the pilot seat.
Mm-hmm.
It's an open skiff, so I mean, it's a Kenai boat. So
yeah, so you can fish right from your...
Yeah, it's seat swivels around, so I can have a rod holder I mounted off the stern and off the sides, and I do all the controls there. I mean, I still have most of my function from the waist up, so I have some abdominal control, and I can keep myself upright. So I use my arms to counterbalance a lot.
Uh-huh.
You mentioned my arms are muscular.
Yeah.
I was a cross-country ski racer before I got hurt, so they've gotten a lot bigger.
Yeah, really. You don't look like the stringy cross-country skiing type, no.
I'm 6'5". I was that type, but yeah. Uh-huh. But now I'm a much bigger upper body.
Yeah.
So I can use my arms to counterbalance and help.
Does that come from the action of running a chair?
Mostly. Or, yeah. I mean, I'm the body type that if I work out, I get bigger. So I usually never used to work out. Now it's my only option is to use a wheelchair or push my hand cycle around.
Yeah.
I did the marathon last weekend, so.
You did, wow.
Finished a marathon on a hand cycle, so that's, my arms are my only option nowadays.
Uh-huh. Boy, I think you would just be rubber-armed after that. It just must be intense.
I'm not as a competitive athlete as some of the other guys that have been on the show here, but I do compete. I used to be a high-level skier, a Nordic skier. Now I've gotten into alpine racing a little bit. I do hand cycle races, but mostly it's to keep myself in shape for skiing in the winter.
So you do alpine skiing on a monoski?
Mm-hmm.
How was that to learn? I mean, it seems like that would be challenging.
I was an advanced skier beforehand. I mean, I mostly did backcountry. I've been in a couple ski movies.
Wow.
Big mountain type things. Learning to ski over again was challenging. It was not the same. I mean, the motions are the same, but my thought process was not the same. The first year was difficult.
You say the motions are the same, but center of gravity, right?
Yeah, the ski has to do the same thing in order to ski. How I make the ski do that is not the way I used to.
Mm-hmm.
So since not that I had a lot of bad habits, but I had to relearn how to ski, and I already knew how to ski, so forcing myself to relearn was not easy.
Well, and you said that about shooting as well, and it seems to me that that would be part of the difficulty or challenge of this is that it's one thing to learn something the first time, but then to be really, really good at it and have to be a beginner all over again would be mentally very difficult. And a lot of people would say, you know, to heck with it.
Those things, being outdoors was my passion beforehand. I decided early on in the hospital I wasn't going to let that stop me. So I spent a lot of time trying to figure out and talking to other people who had done that before and figure out how they did it. And I tried a lot of those ways, and most of them didn't work, but at least I got some ideas to get started in that direction.
Yeah.
And then I found a few things that did work for me. And honestly, you see a guy in a wheelchair, I used to think the same thing. They're all paralyzed, not really able to do much, but every injury is different, and every person is able to do something in a different way than the other person. So I'm living proof that, yeah, I've been able to make things happen because I loved to do it before. I wasn't going to let that stop me.
Yeah. Well, I want to learn more about that journey, but I let people know that it's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth, and I'm talking to Ira Edwards, who's here in the studio in a wheelchair, but has not let it slow him down in terms of his outdoor pursuits, and which seem to be many: skiing, fishing, hunting, racing, just about everything you can do. And I think it'd be, if you don't mind talking about it, Ira, to go back to your injury, how this came about. You were working for state parks and doing some trail clearing.
Yeah, it was after a big windstorm in the middle of November in 2010, and we were trying to get all the trails opened up for both snow machining and for cross-country skiing. And there were a lot of leaning trails across the trees across the trail, and we cleared most of them out that day. I remember we cleared 37 trees away from the trail that day, and the 38th tree cleared me out.
So where was this?
It was out in Nancy Lake State Rec area. Oh, so wow. I was the park ranger up in Upper Willow and Susitna area.
Mm-hmm.
I lived in Anchorage, but I worked out there. I had a place to stay out there. But yeah, we were working on taking down a leaning tree. It's called a widowmaker, where the tree's leaning, but the top half is broken off.
Right.
And trying to tow it down, and we decided to try to cut it a little bit, and it fell wrong, and the tree didn't actually squish me. The top half didn't break off and hit me like a widowmaker normally would. It broke off and pushed the main trunk at me, which was not expected.
So it fell the opposite direction. Yeah.
Yeah. So I ran, and it chased me down, because it should have fell that way, but it fell towards me. Yeah, because it broke off. The tree broke off the trunk where we were starting to cut it. So yeah, I immediately, it squashed me. It hit me in the side of the face. I lost a molar. Did not break my neck, but broke my clavicle and took my whole shoulder to the middle of my back. Broke my back, messed up my hips, dislocated my other shoulder, collapsed one side of my chest.
Hmm.
Luckily, the forest is never flat, so I was pinned underneath a bunch of tundra tussocks and not completely flattened.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was rough. I have a high level of medical training, so I knew right away what was wrong and what could be wrong. That, like, I didn't break my neck, but I was worried I might have.
Yeah.
So I had the crew that was with me quickly cut the tree off of me and then go through a quick medical assessment and get my radio out so I could call for help. So.
Mm-hmm. And then a long recovery process at pretty significant medical process before you even knew what the deal was, right?
I won't say that I was messed up, but I was pretty messed up. I saw the MRIs of my spine, and it was completely dislocated. So I had two separate vertebral columns. And yeah, so I spent almost a month in ICU, and then I went down to Denver for Craig Hospital for rehab for almost 4 months. So
tell me when the... tell me about the emotional process of realizing you're this injured. Obviously, your life has totally changed. Where do you get to the mental space where you say, this isn't going to slow me down, as opposed to just grieving over it?
It was challenging initially, because my arms were pretty messed up. My shoulders, both of them, got severely damaged. And I had to use an electric wheelchair for a while, because it was too painful to even move anything above my elbows. That didn't make me really happy, because then I knew for sure I wouldn't be going to be able to do anything. I did heal enough to start using a manual wheelchair shortly after that. And, but yeah, rehab was slow. I hate to say it, but I felt pretty lucky for what I had left, because there were a lot of people in much worse situations than me. And knowing how I got hurt, I easily could have broken my neck or, much worse, been dead.
Mm-hmm.
So I was pretty thankful for what I was able to keep with me.
Yeah.
And yeah, just I had seen other people do certain types of athletic things I like to do. I'd seen people fishing, I'd seen people hunting, I'd seen people skiing. So I decided I'm going to do it all. But it took a lot of dedication to figure out ways to do that.
Well, I would think there'd be a big therapy process where you have to sort of regain all the, I mean, you need everything you can get, right?
Yeah, and you know, I honestly have a really good support network. I have a lot of friends here, and especially for skiing, I've worked for Rosignol Ski Company since 1999 as a side job, and I have a tremendous amount of friends and industry friends in the ski world. So I had a constant stream of people when I was in the hospital coming to tell me, hey, skiing's going to be fun next year. You're going to be able to do this. It's going to be... So there was a pep talk almost every day in the hospital.
Oh, cool.
I had a lot of friends bring me a root beer, quote, and when I was in the hospital, ski movies, so we sat and watched movies in my hospital room, drinking our root beers.
Uh-huh.
The nurses didn't catch on. I don't think they did. But yeah, I had a pretty... And Denver is a very large ski community, so I had a constant stream of people coming through all the time.
Was that your number one sport that you were really thinking about, I've got to be able to ski, or...?
I wanted to ski above all other things. Mm-hmm. And I knew it was possible. I'm a big guy. I mean, I'm almost 6'5", and I don't fit standard sports equipment from anything. Bicycles, I could break any piece of equipment there is to break.
Yeah.
But yeah, I wanted to be able to ski again. And with that, came the ability to use a hand cycle so I could stay in shape in the summer. It's not really a racing bike, but it gets me out and does everything. It's got knobby tires, mm-hmm. snow tires, skinny tires. So
it's like training just like anybody else has to train. You can't be any good at your sport unless you practice and build up your body.
Yeah, you have to keep your fitness year-round. This winter was challenging with the lack of snow.
I know.
Really odd spring and fall last year. But, I'm getting back in shape now, and that's also helping fishing and things like that.
Yeah.
Because I can move around the boat a lot easier.
Going back to Nancy Lake? I mean, are you canoeing again? And
I've canoed out through there a few times. On most of the trails, I can use my wheelchair on the portages. Mm-hmm. I obviously can't carry the canoe anymore, so yeah. I get friends to help with that. Some of the portages are single plank boardwalks, and those aren't so easy to do, especially when they're almost a mile long.
Yeah.
But a few of the portages I've been able to roll my wheelchair on, or if they're really short portages, I have a pad I can strap onto my butt and just scoot across the ground.
Oh, wow.
So I've done that in a few of the other portages as well.
I would think it'd be tough to get in and out of a canoe.
You know, it's not as difficult as you'd think. If I have my wheelchair with me, I can transfer from the wheelchair to the canoe.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm on the ground, I kind of put my feet in there and have someone sit in the canoe to keep the canoe stable, and I can just lift myself over the edge.
Okay.
Doing a dip or climbing up or out of the edge of a pool.
Just
imagine if you're climbing out of a pool, you pull yourself up off the edge of the pool. Same type of idea. And I've done a fair amount of ocean kayaking, too, the same way.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, with Challenge Alaska a couple of years ago, we helped certify a whole bunch of instructors to teach adaptive canoeing and kayaking. So that was a pretty interesting thing.
What kind of adaptations do you need for canoeing and kayaking? Once you're in there, you can paddle.
Canoeing, right? Not so much. Kayaking, you had to have a lot of... So I have, as a person in a wheelchair, you have... Most people, if they're paralyzed, have a lot of atrophy on their legs and their butt.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to have a lot of special padding in order to keep from getting pressure sores. That's your biggest issue when you're sitting down all the time. So you put some extra foam padding in around the seats and keep yourself locked in pretty good. So you can just use your torso for kayaking. For canoeing, I have my little strap-on pad I keep on strapped onto my butt, and I canoe with that.
Getting out of a kayak on a beach is tricky for anybody, but I would think if you didn't have your legs, it would be super tricky.
It's the same type of idea, scooting around on the ground. You can imagine scooting, just pushing with your hands to scoot there. And then I pull my knees up once my torso is most of the way out of the kayak, and pull my knees up and then lower myself to the ground and then pull my knees around. And everything takes 10 times as long as it should, but it's still sort of doable.
It's not easy, but it's doable. You'll do it.
You try to land on the beach with not really big rolling waves coming in, and you got to land sideways to the beach.
And you figure you're probably going to get wet.
Yeah, dry suits are really nice.
Yeah. So what about camping? I mean, a lot of camping is just sort of improvising in the spot you're in, and you can't necessarily predict what that's going to be like.
Yeah, I've done a couple of camping trips with my hand cycle. Some friends with their little trailers have hauled in gear, and we've set up tents.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, I do a lot more car camping than I used to.
Yeah.
I never thought I would ever enjoy car camping, but it still gets me out.
Yeah.
So I have a nice REI tent I can actually roll my wheelchair into, and a cot I set up inside that. It's a four-person tent, but you can sleep two people in a wheelchair just fine. So, I do a little bit of backcountry camping if I got friends to haul gear. Or like on the Resurrection Trail, I can camp, roll my bike into some of the cabins.
Oh, yeah.
And those aren't easy to get to, but again, the Forest Service is really thinking far in advance. All their new cabins the last 15 years are all ADA accessible.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to get to them.
Right.
Getting to them is not the accessible part, but once you're there.
The wilderness isn't accessible.
But once you get there, you're there.
Yeah.
All the cabins.
So you appreciate it that they've done that.
Yeah, I always wondered, like, why are they going to have a wheelchair ramp in all these cabins?
I've had that thought too, but now that I've met you, I won't wonder anymore.
Yeah, I've been on the entire Resurrection Trail on my hand bike. Obviously, I can't tow as much stuff as I used to, so friends with a little bob trailer on their mountain bikes, it makes things nicer. Getting to like Devil's Pass is a little more challenging. It's a big climb up through the pass. Or if you're doing the whole Resurrection Trail, I didn't do it in a whole day. I take 2 days now. So,
yeah, wow. Very impressive. I'm really glad to meet you. And I think your story should be really inspiring to anybody who, you know, has a disability, or for people who sort of wonder, you know, what can people with disabilities do? They can do it all, and, you know, or at least a lot of it. And so thanks very much for being with us, Ira.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, if you put your mind to it, you can accomplish just about everything.
Yeah.
And I've chosen some things that I'd rather not do again, but everything else, I'm pretty much able to do what I used to.
All right. Ira Edwards, and I'm Charles Wolforth. Stick with us as Outdoor Explorer continues.
You You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on KSKA Anchorage. The program repeats tonight at 8 on FM 91.1. Connect with Outdoor Explorer anytime. Download podcasts and see what's coming up on future programs by going to our website at alaskapublic.org.
And with me now is Larry Kudermarsh, who is a hand cyclist. He's done the Alaska Challenge hand race, which goes from Fairbanks to Anchorage, since like the 1980s, right, Larry?
Oh, the first year was, my first year was 86. 84 would be the first year, and it just started with, and there was no hand cycles then. It was just two participants, Tommy Carnahan and Don Brandon, founded it, and they decided to just get in a couple wheelchairs and see if they could race against each other at Anchorage, and that's how it started.
Right. So just to it sounds impossible
piece of cake
to take a wheelchair 350 miles or through whatever it is 360 miles down the highway.
367.
I guess you've counted every one.
I've seen every one.
Yeah. I think it would be horrendously difficult.
It's hard, but it's. I mean, there are a lot of uphills, and it's really hard, but there's a lot of fun parts, too. I mean, I've hit 65 miles an hour going downhill.
Wow.
And, you know, I could have gotten stopped by a cop.
That sounds fairly dangerous.
Yeah, it was, considering the end of the hill I was on. My lane was closed, and there was oncoming traffic.
Wow.
But I just tucked and went as fast as I could because I wanted to beat them to the pass. Uh-huh. You can slow down in those things, but you can't really stop real quick. So if I'm going to get hit, I want to get hit doing 60, not 20.
Well, that's a good philosophy, I guess. So how many people do this, and what is the competition like? I mean, is it really cutthroat, really go for it competition?
Let's see, over the years, there's been as fields as small as three and fields as big as into the 30s. I mean, 30 people or so. I mean, it's gone really fast, and we have world pros. Matter of fact, Ernst Van Dijk, who's listed as number one in the world, he's raced it like once or twice, and we have world pros come and do it, except for this year. They're really not expecting any world pros because the World Games is going on at the same time period, so it'll mostly be not slower folks, but the competition, I feel, will be better.
Uh-huh. How is it done in terms of, do they shut down part of the road, or do you just go in the...
No, we have pilot vehicles behind us, and with flashing lights, and we try to stay as far over in the, you know, like in the breakdown lane, and, you know, there's signs saying slow traffic, and we just gotta be cautious.
Uh-huh. Have you had any like close calls with vehicles?
Oh yeah, one year my pilot car hit me.
Wow.
But that taught me a very valuable lesson. Never have an ex-girlfriend be your pilot car driver. They'll hit you first chance they get.
Yeah. So what's the best you've done? Have you won the race?
I've never won the race. I've pulled in second. But little funny story, that the first year I did it, I got third place, and it was in a racing wheelchair, and it took me 68 hours, and that was considered pretty quick. The last year I did it, I was at the back of the pack, and it took me 23-something. So I've cut like 2 days off my time, and it's not fast enough yet.
Wow, because the sport has just evolved in this way that it's cut the times by, sounds like...
I mean, equipment's gotten faster, competition's gotten better. I mean, things just get better.
Yeah. So do you stop and spend the night along the way, or how does that work?
Oh, okay. It's kind of like the Tour de France, mm-hmm. to where you start, go like 50 miles, stop, make camp, and every day, you know, everybody starts and stops. I mean, it's done in stages.
I see. And so it's just the elapsed time is added up each time.
Yes, yes.
I was thinking that would make it a lot simpler than everybody getting strung out along the road.
Yeah, yeah. Because then it would be a mess.
So we're talking about the Alaska Challenge Hand Race, which goes from Fairbanks to Anchorage every year with Laudy Cook.
Actually, not every year anymore.
Oh, really?
It's now they've, you know, because of cost and coordination, they switch it to every other year.
Oh, okay.
Like last year, we didn't do it. 2 years ago, we did.
I see. And my guest is Larry Kudermarsh, who's done this race for many years. And we're just talking about outdoors accessibility and how people with disabilities get involved in some pretty extreme outdoor activities, stuff that in this particular case I'm not sure that I would be up for. And it's Outdoor Explorer. My name is Charles Woolforth. So, Larry, tell me about your disability and how you became disabled and then how you got involved in sports. What's the
funny story? Glad you asked. In late 1985, I was traveling down the highway, and a truck ran a red light. I hit the truck, and I got out of the vehicle I was in and walking behind it. A car didn't see me because of ice fog, hit me going about 50, hit me against the car. My legs came off. My face got torn off because I hit the pavement, and I died, but they came, paddled me. I got better, and I was put in the hospital. And then while I'm in the hospital, the man that founded the race, Don Brandon, came in to visit me and told me about the race, and that got me started. You know, I thought it was interesting, and the first year I did it in a regular hospital wheelchair because I didn't know there was such things as a racing wheelchair. And on the day three of that race, somebody loaned me a spare racer, and I pulled third. And I didn't know at the time, but Don Brandon, when he came and saw me, I didn't realize he was traveling down the highway and actually saw me get hit.
Oh, my gosh.
He said he would have, like, tried to help, but then, you know, he was in a wheelchair, so, but he actually saw me get hit. And
wow.
So that's what made him come into the hospital to visit me.
So before you were even out of the hospital, you decided you wanted to be involved in this kind of thing.
Yes. I knew it. Yeah, he got me hammered on it, and he told me about it, and I just thought it sounded really cool. I was much younger at the time, though.
Yeah. Well, did that help you with your transition to, like, your new body and what your new capabilities were going to be?
No, because I've always, you know, been in pretty good shape. Like, I always wanted to be a bodybuilder, and so I always worked out, and the doctor said that if I hadn't been in good shape, that the impact with the vehicles would have probably killed me for good.
Yeah. But, I mean, in terms of just the emotionally getting used to the fact that you now are in, you know, in a wheelchair for life, I would...
Actually, I'm not. I'm ambulatory.
Oh, you are?
Oh, yeah. One of my legs doesn't work.
Oh, I see. Okay.
I'm pretty much considered a single amp.
Okay.
Not that I still have the limb, but most of it's gone. Like, all the muscle from the knee down is removed.
I see.
So I'm basically just walking on a bone.
Wow. So how do you, so when you started doing this and you were already a bodybuilder, that must have been a big advantage because this is all about arm strength, right? Or am I wrong about that too?
Actually, a lot of arm strength, but it's kind of like akin to like using a rowing machine. So the, you know, chest, back, arms, your whole, it's a complete upper body thing. But yeah, it did help, of course. I was in the hospital for 6 months, so by the time I got out, I was pretty out of shape.
Yeah. Well, I think of a wheelchair as being like little arm movements to push the bar that's connected to the wheel. And obviously, you're using these racing chairs now, but you started with the wheelchair.
Yeah.
That you really are not using your big muscle groups that much. You're just sort of using your arm strength, no?
For the hand cycle?
For a wheelchair, just a traditional wheelchair.
Actually, wheelchair, you're using pretty much all the muscles because you're pushing, you're using your shoulders push down, and your arms are just using to move the push rim, using mostly back and shoulders.
Okay, so
and
you're
some tricep.
So like you're saying rowing, so you're moving your upper body and your abs to sort of full.
And some racers, that like paraplegics, they have no ab strength because they can't use their abs at all.
Mm-hmm.
So then they've done it, and so I'd say mostly shoulders and back.
Huh. Boy, I would think you would get really sore in the course of this race. No.
Oh yes, you do. You do. You know, because the first day is the hardest. Except for now, the first and last day is the hardest.
Uh-huh.
But like I said, it's worth it.
So tell me about the bike you use now compared to just a regular wheelchair. What does it look like and how does it work?
Oh, actually, I have a brand new hand cycle. One of the other racers and a really good friend of mine and somebody who is not only am I racing against this year, but he's placed second in the race when a lot of top contenders were in it. And one year he was actually my pilot car driver and his family came along with me and were my crew. His name's Ed Jones and he's selling me his for pretty cheap his Shark Quickie, which is a brand new style, and I went training with him on it and it feels pretty good, and that's what I've got now, and it's really low, really light, and it's a lot faster than I'm used to because it makes me more the way I'm sitting now is I'm more aerodynamic too.
Right, I would think low center of gravity would be important too for going fast and not flipping.
Well, my older hand cycle, I'm pretty much sitting like in a chair and cranking.
Uh-huh.
And so that leaves like a big sail.
Right.
Now my seat reclines way back. So I'm cutting half the wind resistance right off right there.
So are you turning a crank? How are you actually actuating the wheels and how is that power connected? What kind of drivetrain is it that connects that to the wheels?
Like I said, just like a regular bike. You like you said, you crank with your arms. It's like if you were to take the foot pedals on a bike, put them in the same place, and moved it up. So you're cranking with your arms, and the chains goes to the front wheel and through gears. And the shifters are different on most chairs. My shifter, it being a newer chair, is on the handle itself, so I can actually crank and shift, and I don't have to remove my hand to shift.
How does it steer?
Different hand cycle. Actually, they have a kind. My training hand cycle is a lean steer to where the way you lean is the way the wheel turns. And the one I got now is a front steer. It's just like you just turn the crank the way you want to turn, like a bike.
Uh-huh. Huh. So it sounds like the equipment makes a big difference in what you're able to accomplish.
Yeah.
But anything,
the better the equipment, the better you'll. Well, the athlete is 90% of it, but the equipment's actually the athlete's probably about 70%. But the equipment's worth more.
So we're pre-recording the show, and it's as we're talking now. You're actually out there. I don't know if you'll have a radio so you can listen, but maybe you can listen to our show when you get back. And I guess you guys are actually doing the first stage here in Anchorage, and then you're going up to Fairbanks and coming back to Anchorage. It started at Kincaid Park and sort of ran around the airport a little bit on the coastal trail, and then up to Fairbanks and running from basically Esther down to Nenana for your first stage of 46 miles, which that's a very hilly stretch. I mean, that must be really challenging to go over those hills.
Actually, it's you can get to Nenana one of two ways. You can either go up the old Nenana Highway, which is pretty much 10 miles straight up, or you can go up straight up the Parks Highway, which is pretty much 2 5-mile hills back to back.
Yeah, but neither way is easy. Yeah.
That's the days one always. The theory is if you win day one, you win the race.
Really? Why is that? Just because it's so darn hard?
Yeah, because day one, it hasn't always been like that. But normally, if you win day one, you usually win the race because you're in the best shape.
Uh huh. Yeah. Yeah. And each of these stages involves a pretty good stretch of like 40 or 50 miles. How fast do you go on average? How long does it take you to do one of those 50-mile stages?
Oh, depends on the stage. Like day one usually takes me pretty much, I think it cuts off at like at 6 or 8 hours. It usually takes me most of the 8 hours or most of the 6 hours. It takes me pretty much the whole day.
Uh-huh.
But like day three is a quick day and it just speeds right along.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I've done days and, you know, 3 hours, and some days it's taken me 6.
Right. I mean, looking like day three takes you down to close to Denali, and you could say it's easy, but you've got a 3,700 foot elevation gain over 50 miles. So easy might be a relative term here, I think.
Yeah.
So, how do you train for this? I mean, you must have a pretty amazing upper body strength. What is your training regime, and how do you get ready for this race?
During the winter, I train with weights, and when the weather gets nice, I just push the road. And see, I got an advantage. I can push the Parks Highway, and which is big hills, and I try to get as much training as I can.
Uh-huh. So, it's basically just getting on your bike and just riding.
Going, yeah. I have a trainer that I bought this year, too, to where it's like a pedal that you can put on a table and just crank
uh-huh.
and put resistance on. So that'll help me out a little bit.
Do you, how many hours a week do you think you put in?
Let's see. I try to do anywhere from 1 to 3 hours a day.
Oh, wow. That's a pretty big investment of time.
Well, not every day, but like I said, the time I train most is, like yesterday I trained at lunch, and that was an hour, and I try to get in as much training. I try to do at least 3-4 times a week.
Yeah.
I try to, you know, do at least 20 miles
yeah.
a day.
Very impressive. And obviously it's... something that has stayed with you over a long time since you've been doing it since the 80s. Well, good luck in the race, Larry. I'm not sure you need it. Sounds like you sort of know your stuff. But and thanks for being with us today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I've been talking to Larry Cootermarsh, who is an athlete who's participating in the Alaska Challenge, which is this hand cycle race that goes all the way between Fairbanks and Anchorage. Called the longest, toughest hand cycle race in the world. It's Outdoor Explorer. That's it for today's show. I want to thank our guests, Larry Cootermarsh and Andrew Kirka, who you heard earlier, and Ira Edwards. On the next week's edition of Outdoor Explorer, we're talking about sailing. I'll have guests who have done an amazing sailing trip all the way across the Pacific Ocean and a sailing instructor here in South Central Alaska with advice on how anyone can get into this sport affordably. I hope you'll join us. Our producer is Monica Gokey. Grace Bogine arranges our guests, and I'm your host, Charles Wolforth. I'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal, The Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and on iTunes. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life informed. This is Alaska Public Media.